It's my nerd world, and welcome to it, a Star Wars show. This week, Daisy Ridley talks the rise of Skywalker and her parents. George Lucas didn't have a plan for the original trilogy. I'll give you my thoughts on Bad Batch Season 2, Episode 5. Thank you so much for checking out My Nerd World. Remember, support My Nerd World by going to mynerdworld.net. And taking a look at the Embark science fiction space opera series, follow a ragtag squadron of pilots and one reluctant hero on a journey of survival from Earth to the far reaches of space as they fight for humanity's future among the stars.
It's an instinct. Feeling. The Force brought us together. We're not alone. Good people will fight if we lead them.
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
But I do.
Long have I waited. Now, you're coming together. Is your undoing. Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny. The Force will be with you.
Always.
My Nerd World.
It is My Nerd World. Welcome to it. I'm your host, John Justice, a Depeche Mode. Excuse me. A Star Wars show. Sorry. I just got done recording my Depeche Mode podcast, so I got Depeche Mode on the brain, and now I must transition to that galaxy far, far away. Thank you so much for checking out the episode this week. So, let's kick things off, and I'll share my thoughts about Bad Batch Episode 5 from Season 2.
We are the spark that'll light the fire that'll burn the First Order down.
All right, so I enjoyed the episode. Some people are calling it another filler episode. I suppose you could describe it that way. I think that really what these have been is, you know, have been more just singular adventures with the Bad Batch that have just been fun to go on. This one I was a little perplexed by, as was my 16-year-old son, Kyle, as we just weren't quite understanding what the, if you saw the episode, the giant mechanical creature that pops up at the end. That mechanical, it's not really a creature, but that mechanical, I guess it is. Anyways, the big tall thing with legs that pops up at the end of the episode is actually taken from the Jedi Fallen Order game of a society, as the character had said in the show, played by Wanda Sykes, had said that this was, you know, long before the Jedi as well. So there's potentially some long-term play going on here as it relates to the storytelling. So if you've done your due diligence and you want to know more and you go to YouTube, there's been several videos posted as to the background of that machine that popped up and was destroying the planet. It was oddly reminiscent as well to the Sith Temple that appeared in, I believe, the end of Episode 2 of Rebels. The whole episode for Bad Batch, though, had Indiana Jones vibes. It was pretty clear, in my opinion, that this was an homage to Indiana Jones, especially the music, along with just going into the mountain, and there was also some nods to Lord of the Rings as well. It was fun. I mean, there wasn't a lot of depth to it, and that's okay. It was just a fun adventure to go on with a group of characters that I happen to enjoy. From those that have had the opportunity, because several podcasters have had the opportunity to see through, I believe, 14 of the 16 episodes, specifically Christian Harloff on the Sith Council podcast, he had mentioned that very soon there will be a storyline developing within the show where we will end up getting sort of a common thread that runs through Bad Batch. And up until that point, we've kind of had these singular episodes. But they've been fun, you know, weekly new Star Wars to watch. And this fan isn't complaining. All right, let's move on to some other news. And more specifically, Daisy Ridley talking once again about The Rise of Skywalker.
This is not going to go the way you think.
So Daisy Ridley recently sat down with Variety magazine, and she was asked this question. How do you feel, and I hate when things are worded this way, because it's just not true. Anyway, how do you feel about The Rise of Skywalker, the way the way the films ended? That's fine. Because that film retconned almost all of what transpired in The Last Jedi, as far as Rey's parentage and a bunch of other things. Now, I don't agree with that. I understand what they're driving at. And I get the desire to use the word retconned. It's a bit of a, oh, for lack of a better word, I'll say triggered, but just that word in and of itself. The returning of Kylo's mask after it being destroyed in the Last Jedi. The obvious parentage aspect of it, which I'll get to here in just a second. Luke tossing away his lightsaber. I mean, these are all things that people want to go and point to, saying that J.J. Abrams undid everything that Rian Johnson did. And I just don't personally see it that way. And we'll talk a little bit more about this with the main topic for the show this week in just a moment. The question goes on and says, the message of The Last Jedi appeared to be that anyone can be extraordinary, but then that message was erased in the final film. So this was Daisy Ridley's response. So you'll have to forgive me if you hear my dog Artemis barking in the background. I don't think she likes the fact that the house is empty at the moment. So, as I was saying, Daisy Ridley replied to the question saying, well, J.J. Abrams was the one who was like, she's of no one. So it wasn't just The Last Jedi where that was that message. What was interesting about the last one for me was that you can be a hero and not come from anywhere, or you can be a hero and come from literally the worst person in the universe. You're not just your parents, you're not your grandparents, you're not your bloodline, and you're not the generations before you. So I was like, sure, but it's beyond my pay grade. I say the words, do the thing. I do love the version of you can be anything you want to be, but I also love the version where you can rectify wrongs and can't help what you're born into. Look, it was a very diplomatic thing for a very diplomatic way, in my opinion, for Daisy Ridley to answer that question. There's a lot of speculation, as I've talked about on the show, that Daisy has been talking. Well, she has been talking with Lucasfilm. She, on her social media, would make it seem that it's been very just sort of her visiting Lucasfilm. But with the rumors going around of the David Lindelof film and the potential of it being placed after The Rise of Skywalker, and the inclusion of Daisy Ridley certainly would seem to make sense if that were the case. So an answer like that with regard to the question seems, again, very middle of the road, very safe, and something that an actor or actress would say, especially if they plan on being in future Star Wars projects. I've made it no secret whatsoever my love of the sequel trilogy, and specifically the rise of Skywalker and the decisions made in that. Which brings me to the main topic that I wanted to get into this week. And this one goes out to all the individuals who don't like the sequels and specifically like to constantly point out how, in their opinion, they didn't have a plan. And that's what the biggest problem was with the sequels.
Something inside me has always been there. But now it's awake. And I need help.
So on a whim, I still have DirecTV. And I happened to be scrolling through the guide. And I came across this show from Vice. Vice On Demand. Vice is an online publication. They also produce documentaries as well. And I think there actually is a Vice channel now. So I saw this Vice Icons Unearthed. And it was a documentary about Attack of the Clones. And I'm like, what is this? Hadn't heard anything about this at all. So I went into my guide and I pulled up this series. And it turns out these are 6 full-length, 45-minute episodes. They have 2 devoted to A New Hope. They have 1 devoted to The Empire Strikes Back. 1 to Return of the Jedi. 1 for The Phantom Menace. And then actually, I think they have 2 for The Phantom Menace and then... No, 1 for The Phantom Menace and then 1 devoted to Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So I've only watched a portion of the prequels, but I have watched the entirety of the original trilogy documentaries. And they are, in a word, fascinating. My favorite documentary for the original trilogy is Empire of Dreams. It's available on the Disney Plus app. Originally released on the DVD, and I believe the Blu-ray too, but certainly the DVD. This is almost on par with that, except for the fact that this Icons Unearthed series isn't done by Lucasfilm, and so therefore, there's a lot more information buried in these than what we got from sort of the official, doing that thing with my fingers, Lucasfilm Empire of Dreams documentary. And what you discover in this original trilogy documentary is George Lucas didn't have a plan for the original trilogy. Now, if you followed any of the documentaries or, you know, the ones that I've referred to, and there's been a lot of different ones. The Empire of Dreams is the most extensive one. It's been said often and in that documentary that George Lucas essentially had a story. It was originally called The Star Wars. He retitled it at some point to Star Wars. And that when he went to go make the first movie, the story that he had was too big. So he split it up into 3 with the hopes of making the first movie from the first part of his story. And then if it was successful, he would go and make the other 2 parts. And then that's what we got. According to this Icons Unearthed documentary, though, that's not what happened. Now, it seems pretty clear that George Lucas had a general outline of the way the story was going to go. However, in this documentary, not only do you have interviews with those in charge of the special effects, a lot of time spent with George Lucas's ex-wife, Marsha Lucas, which we'll talk quite a bit about here in just a moment, and also Kazanjian, who was the producer in part, I think, on Empire, but definitely on Return of the Jedi. And what gets revealed in this are a lot of behind-the-scenes elements to the original trilogy that I had never heard about. So it seems pretty clear that George really didn't have much more than a rough outline of those 3 films. But in terms of the actual stories, they didn't really exist. So I've jotted down here just a few specific notes that I wanted to share as I make my broader point on the show this week. So... the original A New Hope, George obviously, and this has been well documented, wasn't sure if it was going to be a failure. The movie was pretty much a mess in its first incarnation. He had the editor that came in that eventually won the Academy Award for editing that really was the one who pieced the film together, as did Marsha Lucas late in the production process. They were using edits of the film right up until the point of the last frame. I've talked about this before on the show. One of the best examples of that is when Luke is attacked by the Tusken Raider, and the Tusken Raider, his arms get rocked back and forth. They rocked the frame to get added movement from him because it was the end of the actual film in that moment. But here's where it gets interesting. George Lucas, and this has also been documented, but I didn't hear this aspect of it. George Lucas had a novel written called Splinter of the Mind's Eye. For those of us that knew the Star Wars film, were fans of it, very excited to get the Splinter of the Mind's Eye long before The Empire Strikes Back came into fruition. Well, it turns out the Splinter of the Mind's Eye was written to be a sequel, and this has been talked about in other places, so this one is entirely new, but they certainly got into much more detail on this documentary. than I have seen on previous documentaries. But Splinter of the Mind's Eye was going to be the sequel to A New Hope if A New Hope failed. To the point where he had the author of Splinter of the Mind's Eye actually remove a major space battle that was supposed to take place in the story because George Lucas didn't think that he would have the budget to shoot it if he had to go and film Splinter of the Mind's Eye as a film. So as the story goes, it was Lee Brackett who died shortly after she returned in the first draft who came up with the initial story for The Empire Strikes Back. Then it was Lawrence Kasdan who came in and helped to change the script because George Lucas didn't particularly care for it. Marsha Lucas played a huge part in crafting specific moments in the original trilogy, especially as it relates to Return of the Jedi, and I'll get to more of that here in a second. Other things that were pointed out are things that we all kind of knew already. Luke and Leia were not brother and sister. That was decided later on as they got into Return of the Jedi, which, you know, you can see with the awkward kiss that takes place that we all kind of use our own headcanon, and they didn't realize that they were brother and sister, but that was never George Lucas's plan. Apparently, it was a friend during dinner, according to Marsha Lucas, who suggested that Darth Vader become Luke's father. When they came around to do Return of the Jedi, originally, George Lucas wanted David Lynch to be the director, but he turned it down, so they ended up going with Eye of the Needle director Richard Marquand. It turns out Richard Marquand was overwhelmed with the filming of Return of the Jedi. He didn't know how to deal with the special effects aspect of it, wasn't working well with the actors. And again, there's been little snippets of this discussed about how Lucas came in and had to handle most of Return of the Jedi as it relates to the filming of the movie, because George didn't want to direct anymore at that point in time, especially after doing A New Hope and all the struggles that they had on A New Hope. But what this Icons on Earth documentary really exposes is just what an absolute mess it really was and how big of a hand George Lucas had in Return of the Jedi and its filming. What's even more interesting is Marsha Lucas and George Lucas, as this has been documented as well, were in the middle of a divorce towards the end of the post-production process in Return of the Jedi. Marsha Lucas still came in the middle of the divorce to edit and basically craft the most emotional scenes in the movie. So, for example, in the scene where Obi-Wan Kenobi shows up on Dagobah as a Force ghost to Luke, Mark Hamill had played that moment as being very angry at Obi-Wan Kenobi. And Marsha Lucas had decided, well, that's not how a Jedi would act. So she was tasked on her own to have to go and pick the most subdued version of Luke in those scenes, the most subdued take to show that he wasn't angry. In the editing bay is where they ended up crafting the emotional impact of the Vader, Emperor, and Luke scene at the end on the Death Star 2. And it was Marsha Lucas who really pieced that together. I guess it was, according to the documentary, it was a mess. It was lacking a lot of emotional impact. They had to go and do reshoots because you weren't buying into that Darth Vader would suddenly out of nowhere then go and help his son after just standing there. So they had to go and reshoot Vader looking at Luke getting hit by the Force lightning, then looking back at Palpatine, and then looking back over again until he goes and throws him down the shaft. What's clear, though, is that if it wasn't for all of the people around George Lucas that had a hand in crafting these films, they wouldn't have been what they ended up being. Now, this is not a dig on George Lucas at all. My point in all this is that when you really step back and look, especially to all those that claim about the sequel trilogy not having a plan, you can look at the prequel trilogy, and I think that's probably the best example. George Lucas handled the directing of all three of those films, of the most consistent of all the Star Wars films, especially of the three trilogies. Just in terms of the storytelling, the look, the way they're filmed, and that was George Lucas from beginning to end. Now, you know, that trilogy was the most It was the least well received, and I think, you know, honestly, in terms of numbers and box office, and I'm sure this is arguable, probably still of the three, you're going to go original trilogy, in my opinion, sequel trilogy, then prequel trilogy. Although I'm sure many of you would argue, but it's all subjective, right? But I think in terms of box office returns, the sequel trilogy, even when adjusting for inflation, did better than the prequel trilogy did. But all of this is to say is that the sequel trilogy was actually better handled than the original trilogy was. George Lucas had his own issues with directors, just like we've seen happen with Disney, with Lucasfilm, throughout all, you know, many of the different films where directors have been pulled from, or you had Tony Gilroy coming in to handle the re-edits and reshoots for Rogue One, the pitching off by Kathleen Kennedy of the directors of Solo, A Star Wars Story. When you go back and look at the way that original trilogy was created and all the controversies and all the difficulties and all that, there's an argument to be made the sequel trilogy was actually better handled than the original trilogy was. And as I mentioned a moment ago, the prequels are a better example, you know. And even then, George Lucas made up a lot of that as he was going along. So, what am I saying is, I'm saying that the fandom menace is ridiculous, and they always have been. The complaints have always been overblown. I get it if people don't like Disney Star Wars content. That's cool. It's all subjective. I've always said that. But I wish that people would stop pointing to things that honestly happen all the time during filmmaking that really didn't impact the quality of those films. It really just comes down to, you didn't like the way that The Last Jedi story was told, and you didn't like the way that Rian Johnson filmed it. You didn't like the way that J.J. Abrams handled the, you know, the last film in the series, in The Rise of Skywalker. I get it. You didn't like that movie. And yeah, maybe if there was a complete and total story arc that was already handed to these directors, it would have played differently for many people. But be that as it may, the original trilogy wasn't even really played out that way. They were making stuff up as they went along throughout the entire process of making those films. And so I sat back watching this documentary and I was just laughing, going, my gosh, I hope that people go and find this. Now, I don't know if this is available on vice.com. I haven't done my due diligence on that, so I apologize if you still are connected to cable and haven't cut it yet. Again, I found it Vice on Demand. I'm going to be watching the prequel trilogy episodes here in the coming week, and I'll share my thoughts about them on next week's show. But again, this was some of the most insightful, and I guess no holds barred is the best way that I can describe these particular documentaries, because they really did show the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they got into a lot of George Lucas's personal life, and it was really moving, actually. Marcia Howard, at the end of the last documentary for Return of the Jedi, was in tears, saying that she hadn't talked to George Lucas for a long time. She didn't know if she would ever see him again. She's sort of acknowledging her age and George Lucas's age, and says that she hopes that, you know, she hasn't seen him for the last time. And it was really George that ended that relationship through a lot of turmoil during Return of the Jedi. And the individuals involved in Return of the Jedi all saw Marcia and George Lucas as, you know, being just an incredibly powerful, strong, healthy, married couple, and they saw it fall apart in front of them. And I didn't realize that there was as much turmoil on Return of the Jedi as there was. Anthony Daniels makes some really biting comments. Now, Anthony Daniels, you know, already tends to be a bit snarky if you've watched him on any of the celebration circuits or anything like that, but he actually makes it pretty clear, at least in my view, at the end of it, that he didn't like the way the C-3PO was handled at the end of Return of the Jedi. It's really quite comical. So I would really encourage you, as a fan of Star Wars, to go find this Icons Unearthed and these documentaries. They were just really, really incredible to watch. So with that, it wraps up the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I did recording it, and that is a Star Wars show, not a Depeche Mode show. If you like Depeche Mode, by the way, they got a brand new single coming out next week, and I just recorded a podcast about that, which you can find on my Depeche Mode, My Nerd World feed. So either way, again, thank you so much for the show this week. I hope wherever you are happy, you are healthy, and you are safe. And I'll talk to you again next week, and I'll give you my thoughts, not only on the next episode of Bad Batch, but also these the prequel trilogy for the Vice Icons Unearthed documentary. Talk to you then. Bye.
The Force will be with you. Always.
My Nerd World.